DW Spectrum with Connor Dillon and Gabriel Borrowed.
Hello and welcome to Spectrum. My name is Connor Dillon.
And I'm Gabriel Borrowed.
And this is our Hyperloop special.
What kind of a sound was that?
I think that
pathetic.
Was
pathetic. Pull that off a cereal box?
Here's the thing. There is no sound of a Hyperloop. I had to create that sound. I had to make that sound. I had to imagine what a Hyperloop would sound like because they don't actually exist.
Oh, right. Because of the friction thing, air friction.
Well,
there's no air in the tube. It just kind of just
flies through there, right? So there are no Hyperloops, but this is a Hyperloop special. Why are we doing a Hyperloop special? That's because in December, Elon Musk is going to have the first walkthrough of one of the tunnels he has been building in California. And I just thought this is a nice time to check in on where the Hyperloop is at, his big prestige project here on planet Earth.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, we're not going to fly to the U.S., obviously. It'd be fun, but we're not going to do that. We're here in Europe, and let's figure out where the Hyperloop stands here in Europe. And the answer is in Delft.
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 Delft. It's a really fun word to say. It's the name of a Dutch city that, to be honest, I had not heard of.
Yeah, over by The Hague, just a bit south of Amsterdam.
Yeah, very close to the coast.
Great name. Delft.
So why Delft? Delft was the winner of the first ever pod race, the pod competition that was held.
That was back in 2017.
Yeah, so in 2017, this crew from the Technical University in Delft flew out to California and put their miniaturized pod on this test track, and they won in a variety of categories that were kind of added together in the end, and they ended up winning it. And if it were just that, I wouldn't consider going to Delft if they just won this little race, but it's much bigger than that. The folks at the TU Delft are planning what they call a Hyperloop vision for Europe.
Yeah, they're going to connect the entire continent with Hyperloop connections all over the place. Pretty ambitious.
That's the idea. That is a huge idea. So without further ado, why don't we head toward Delft in the Netherlands?
Let's go meet the team at Delft.
And meet the captain of the Delft Hyperloop squad.
Rienica. Is she here?
Hi, Rienica.
Connor.
My name's Gabriel. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Yep. So this is it. This is the Delft Hyperloop building.
Yeah. This is our office. Let's take a look inside.
Oh, thanks.
So we are in a very cavernous, old
building. It looks
building
old.
With lots of pipes. What is this?
Yeah, it used to be an old chemistry building, but then didn't conform all the regulations anymore, so they had to move. And then the building was empty, so now we are here doing our research and our designing.
Okay, some of your colleagues walking around, we'll probably meet them very shortly here.
Yeah.
But just for our listeners, real quickly, can you introduce yourself, Rienica?
Oh, yeah, I'm Rienica. I'm a Dutch student at Delft University of Technology. I have a background in civil engineering, and this year I'm team captain of Delft Hyperloop. Team that is competing in Elon Musk's SpaceX Hyperloop pod competition next summer.
Okay, so I know that there are a lot of teams out there who participate in the yearly competition to have, basically the fastest miniature-sized Hyperloop model put into a tube in California, right? But you are doing something much bigger than that as well. Can you tell our listeners about what your plans are for Europe or what your Hyperloop project is?
Yeah, except for only the competition, we also want to work on the development of Hyperloop. So really look into the implementation in society, look at the way society may accept the Hyperloop and the technological challenges that come along with it. More than just tackling the competition, also getting some social relevance there.
So you're working to create, in fact, I think I'm looking at it maybe, what you've created already, a real Hyperloop pod and a real Hyperloop network, a system for Europe.
Yeah, we are. We're thinking of ways to get all companies involved as well, really work together to get the Hyperloop going, because we believe that, you know, travel in this way it is right now, it's not sustainable, it's not durable, so we really need to come up with something new, and we think that is the Hyperloop.
Okay, well, I have lots of questions about your ideas, but first
I bet the listener has a lot of questions too. What the heck is a Hyperloop?
Yeah, what is a Hyperloop?
If you were to take a toy train car and put it inside an empty toilet paper roll, you'd be about halfway to creating a Hyperloop. A hyperloop is a sealed tube or system of tubes that has nearly all of the air molecules sucked out. The reason that the air is taken out is so that the hyperloop pod, or your train car in this case, can travel in the tube with almost no air resistance at all. The air is completely gone. In fact, since hyperloops don't even have wheels, there's almost no friction happening at all. Instead, they use magnets to levitate or float just above the track that they are traveling on. This almost complete lack of friction is what allows hyperloop pods to travel comfortably, at least in theory, at speeds of 1200 kilometers per hour, or about 750 miles per hour. That's as fast as an aeroplane. Except, it wouldn't be thousands of meters above the ground. The tube or pipe is usually only about 5 meters above the ground. Or it could be buried underground, just like a tunnel. If that all sounds rather expensive, it's because it is. A conservative estimate for hyperloops puts their cost at about 1 billion euros for every 100 kilometers of track.
Okay, so we have a little background now on what a hyperloop is and what it's supposed to do. Rinaka, there's a model here that looks like a miniature submarine. Can you explain what this thing is?
Well, this thing was actually the pod we used in the first competition. Back then, the rules were a bit different. Right now, we only race for top speed, actually. So the whole goal is to go as fast as possible in the tube. And 3 years ago, I believe, the goal was still to make a scalable pod, to make a concept that would really, you know, take off and could really become a hyperloop. And that is this model we're looking at right now.
How fast can you get this model going?
This model, not so fast, unfortunately, around 30, 50 kilometers an hour. We believe that the Hyperloop will go around 1,200 kilometers an hour in the future.
1,200 kilometers an hour?
Yeah.
How does that compare to airplane?
Wait, yeah, compared to like an airplane, that's way faster, right?
Yeah, that's faster. Airplanes go around 800, 900 kilometers an hour. Okay. But because, of course, you don't travel in any air, you don't have any air resistance nor rolling resistance because you use magnets, you can reach those high speeds using very little energy and maintain those high speeds as well.
So this thing will be floating?
Yeah.
Levitating?
Yeah, levitating.
It's not going to be on a track or anything like that?
Yeah, it's going to levitate on a track.
And it's in a tube?
Yes.
How does it not
fly
hit
off
the tube or bounce around in the tube or fly? Like, how do you get it to stay at a constant level above the ground if it's floating?
You can monitor the distance between the magnets and the track and between the magnets and itself. So then you get feedback in your system that your distance is increasing, and then you can make the magnets stronger so that they will attract and decrease the distance again. So you have this feedback loop that will make sure that the distance between the magnets also always the same length.
Germany doesn't have any trains that use magnets. They have these ICE trains that go up to 300 kilometers an hour, and I have asked people in the past, why not? I mean, China has these maglev trains. And the answer has always been, it's too expensive. Germany wouldn't do it because it's just too expensive. So how is this magnet or sort of magnetic levitation system not super expensive?
Well, it is super expensive, but what you're getting in return is also really valuable. Like I said, the Hyperloop uses far less energy than regular ways of transportation, and that can make it cheaper for your wallet, but also cheaper for the environmental impact that it makes. And that is really worth a lot of money.
Quick question before I forget. You said you had some colleagues here, yeah?
Hi.
Connor?
Nice to meet you. I'm Tim.
Gabriel.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
And Tim, what do you do here?
I'm the lead of the full-scale Hyperloop department. I think Ring already has explained that we have, on the one hand, we have the competition that we participate in, but on the other hand, we also really would like a Hyperloop in the future. And my department focuses on the implementation and the challenges around the Hyperloop. We'll try to solve those challenges and focus on the implementation issues that there are. So that means doing research, doing tests, and convince people that the Hyperloop can be feasible in the future.
I'm going to play the concerned citizen, and I want you to make me feel safe. Tim, I hop in your Hyperloop, and the atmospheric pressure is way lower outside, so a little crack in my window means I get sucked out into the pipe and die.
If there is a crack in the window, at first there are no windows. We will have other colors, for example, displaying the air so that you feel more safe, and the system is made and designed for very high safety factors. The walls will be approximately, of the passenger module, will be approximately 10 centimeters thick.
10 centimeters?
Yes.
Okay, so roughly 3-4 inches thick.
Yeah, and that's thicker than airplanes are. So that's more safe. Actually, the idea is to be more safe in airplanes. And if there is a very small crack in the wall, even if it's designed for not to be, then the whole tube can be depressurized instantly in order to release the vacuum level to a normal atmospheric pressure, so that you don't have very high shock waves from the pressure distances.
Pressure differences. The pressure question is the one thing. We're going how fast again?
1,000 kilometers per hour.
Okay, we're going 1,000 kilometers.
Buckle up!
And every 30 seconds or so, a new pod goes. So, you know, they're not that far away from each other. Does this thing have good brakes? Because what if the guy ahead of me, you know, slows down, or for whatever reason, you know, there's a head-on collision, can it stop?
Yeah, it has very good brakes. And in order to give an indication of the speed, airplanes are also traveling at 900 kilometers per hour, so this is only slightly faster than an airplane. And the brakes are designed to be able to stand still in 20 to 25 seconds, and that's only when one pod will fail instantly, so if there is a brake wall in the tube. But it's not apparently that there will be an instant stop.
Next question from a concerned citizen. A terrorist sticks a bomb on the side of the tube right before my pod goes whisking through it. It explodes. How do we stop? How do we prevent that kind of terror act?
For a Hyperloop, when you have an above ground infrastructure, then it will be placed on pillars, for example, 5-6 meters above ground. So it's not very good reachable at first. Furthermore, it will be constructed mainly close to current infrastructure, so it's even less good reachable. And when there is a bomb at one place, then it doesn't mean that the whole infrastructure will be demolished. It will be that part, and all the pods inside can come to a very fast standstill in order to reduce the casualties.
Who's driving the pods?
That will be fully autonomously.
You do have the parameters or the details. Can you give me the rough dimensions of what a future Delft pod would look like?
Yeah, we think that in order to accommodate passenger demand in the future, that we need approximately 50 passengers per pod.
50?
50, yeah. And that is possible in 30 meters. So this will be 30 meters long and 2.5 meters in diameter. And with the 2.5 meters in diameter, we can guarantee 2 seats on the left, 1 seat on the right, and an aisle in order to walk to the toilet that is at the end of the pod.
Tim, you are almost 2 meters tall, I'm judging. So an extra 2.5 in, or an extra 0.5 in diameter means your head is probably scraping the ceiling?
No, we did design for that. It will be 2.1 meter tall in the pod itself, so there will be 0.4 meters for technology spacing approximately, so there's 2.1 meter left for people to walk. So I can walk in the future in our Hyperloop pod, because I'm 2.3 meters, and we did take the growth of people into account.
Okay, so only maybe NBA basketball players will have a tough time, but most people won't.
Right now, they already have a big problem in airplanes and trains, so because in the Dutch trains, I'm not even able to stand.
One question that's on my mind, because Gabe and I had some coffee on the way here. Is there a restroom inside?
Yeah, he said there was going to be a toilet.
Is there one?
Yeah, that's our idea of having a toilet inside, because a trip from Amsterdam to Paris will take approximately 30 minutes.
All right, hold on. Just a second. Let's take a break here. We're back in the studio. Take a break from Tim and Renika. It is very good that there would be toilets on these things, because the trip from Cologne to Delft took
3 hours.
3 hours, but I had three breaks.
No, it's an interesting, it's one of those things you don't automatically think of. But once he started talking about this, my mind was off and running, and I want to talk about something that's going to sound very puerile and very juvenile, basically. But this is the idea of the physics behind what happens when somebody takes a hyper poop in a hyper loop. And you laugh, but it's a serious question, because let's just imagine this for a moment. A Hyperloop goes whizzing by and I'm standing on the side of a field and observing it.
Yeah.
And this Hyperloop is made of glass. So as it goes whizzing by, I watch, unfortunately, I have to watch this person using the restroom. And the, without using, you know, any words that are going to disgust people, the object that would drop into the toilet,
yeah,
for the person sitting on the toilet would drop straight down. But because this Hyperloop is moving so fast from my frame of reference, which is perfectly valid, it would not drop straight down. This vehicle would be moving at roughly 300 meters per second. And the time it would take to drop...
That's 1,200 kilometers an hour?
1,200 kilometers an hour
is... 300 meters a second.
300 meters per second.
Okay.
So the time it would take for it to drop down into the water is enough that that vehicle, everything in it, would have traveled 100 meters.
How long does it take to drop? I mean, what distance are we talking about here?
Okay, so that's where I kind of had to...
make some generalities.
Make some fuzzy math here. I assumed the drop to the water was about 40 centimeters, just over a foot. And based on
That's a long drop.
It's unrealistically long, but it helped my math.
It just made your numbers easier. Okay.
And that would take about 0.3 seconds. So this whole craft and everything in it has traveled 100 meters in that time. That means the falling object, and mm-hmm. I'll leave it at that, mm-hmm. has traveled an extra 100 meters from my perspective, kind of at a slant, versus what the observer inside the bathroom, inside the restroom, would have seen.
Because it keeps up the velocity that was going at.
Exactly.
It's just kind of now, sort of falling diagonally down.
Exactly. Over the course of a football field.
Right.
Which is a lot. And because my point of view is valid and correct, and the person in the restroom's point of view, frame of reference, is also valid and correct, both of those things are true. That object dropped 6 inches, what 40 centimeters, just over a foot for that one person. For me, it traveled 100 meters. So what has to change in this situation is time. And this is where we get into time dilation. Gabe, I'm going to pass a piece of paper over to you there. You can go ahead and take a look at what you, go and describe what you see.
Delta T equals delta T, what's the T-O?
That is going to be...
You just gave me two huge formulas
Yeah,
here.
I've translated it kind of into layman's terms.
Delta T equals delta TO
mm-hmm.
divided by the square root of 1 minus V over C squared.
And this is the...
What is that?
This is the time dilation equation. So because both of those frames of reference are valid, what has to change in this scenario is the amount of time that transpired for these two different people. So the... What we're going to put into this equation mm-hmm. is what it would have been like for the person sitting on the toilet. For the person sitting on the toilet, this entire event would have taken about 0.3 seconds. But because...
For the object to fall...
Into the water.
Into the water.
Mm-hmm. And because this craft, this Hyperloop, was traveling at roughly 1/1,000,000th the speed of light, so 300 meters per second versus the speed of light, which is
186,000 miles a second.
Mm-hmm. And the math is actually easier here in the metric system. So 300 meters per second versus 300,000 kilometers per second.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So it's really easy math. 1/1,000,000th of the speed of light is enough to make it, for me, the observer, standing outside next to a field, basically.
How far are you away from the Hyperloop? Is that negligible?
Irrelevant, okay. Basically, in this scenario. But what all of this means is the event for the person in the toilet took 0.3 seconds. For me, the observer outside of the train, this event took 0.3 and then a whole lot of zeros. This is like 10 zeros and then a 1 and a 5 at the end of it. So what that means is it took very slightly longer than 3 seconds. And that's just a valid statement. That's really what happened. And what that also implies is that the person inside the restroom is slightly younger than me now. If we had been born at the same time, that person is slightly younger. I'm slightly older. And that's really how it is.
Wow. With the object falling into the water, I was with you. But why is the person doing the action younger?
Because they have
experienced... Because I'm watching from further away?
Because they have moved... They're moving quickly, not all that quickly compared to the speed of light. They're moving, so they've experienced 0.3 seconds of time. Meanwhile, I'm not moving. I have experienced
0.3015
seconds of time, and that is actually how it is. Now, the other interesting thing about special relativity is that the objects in the train, because they're moving so quickly, have gained a lot of mass.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, not a lot of mass in this case, but some mass. But I thought that was a bit more disgusting comparison.
Based on the energy
of the moving vehicle.
Because mass times, so there's another, mass times c squared, mass times the speed of light squared.
There's another equation there energy. That you could do and figure out how much more people weigh, how much more everything weighs. You could also look at the distance, how the distance has changed based on their speed, and that's another fact. But there's also time dilation and,
What's the moral to this story?
Due to special relativity and time dilation, a hyper poop takes less time than a normal poop.
Let's get back to Delft.
Rinika, it looks like I am looking at the guts of a pod. It vaguely looks like a combination between the inside of a computer, the gas canisters from a paintball gun, and perhaps an electric motor there.
This is the competition vehicle that raced last year. It has all sorts of interesting technicalities on board. The electromotor you see, it's not going to be in the actual pod, you know, in the actual vehicle that will transport us to all the different cities in the world. But it is our way of accelerating as fast as possible.
How long did it take to build this?
Half a year.
The total designing, construction, testing took, I think it was 100,000 engineering hours of the last team.
100,000 hours? Work went into this for
you. You're 37 people in total. within 1 year. So it was really hard working. Yeah. But it's amazing to have accomplished something like this.
We have a lot of young listeners around the world who, some of whom might be really excited about the Hyperloop and would love to participate in this kind of project, would love to go to a university where they could join a team like yours. What should they do? What should they study? How should they do it?
Well, especially true for our team. I don't know if it's true for the other teams as well. As long as you're motivated and you really have a vision of what the Hyperloop should be, how the technology should be, you can get hired. It doesn't matter what your background is. If your background in civil engineering is not super relevant for the competition, but if you have a vision, if you're motivated, you can get there.
What were your guys' stories? How did you initially get involved?
Yeah, my bachelor is technology, policy, and management. And last year, I started my master's in transport, infrastructure, and logistics.
But what was it about the Hyperloop? I don't care what you studied.
That was what I'm going to say, because the Hyperloop, it is transport, infrastructure, logistics. It is technology, it is policy, it is management, it's everything. And that's what inspires me the most, because it's so innovative, and it's new, and it is not there yet. You have to take into account every single piece. For example, the toilet that you asked us. If there is a toilet on board, that is such a small thing, but you have to take that into account. And that's because my background is very has a big variety, and I want to take everything into account. And that's what I see in the Hyperloop. We can take everything into account, and we will need to take everything into account in order to accomplish and to have a Hyperloop in the future.
And Rinika, what drew you to the Hyperloop?
Like I said, I have a background in civil engineering, and in civil engineering, everything moves so incredibly slowly. And it was just tired of companies not wanting to innovate, you know? So I decided that I did want to be part of innovation. And then I saw the Hyperloop team. And Hyperloop is literally the fastest team we have in the TU Delft, except for the rockets things. But we can go so fast. And Hyperloop has not been developed yet. So you go from scratch to a prototype. And that's really unique in Hyperloop and this project.
If you had become a bridge builder, you would have had a job that would have been definitely hard, but you would have known we're going to build this bridge.
Yeah.
It's not 100% clear that the Hyperloop is going to happen. Is that in itself, is that more of a challenge or a burden psychologically, or is that something that maybe even intensifies the excitement?
Yeah, well, exactly that. It intensifies the excitement because you know that you can have an impact on whether it will be developed or not. If you do well, if people are excited about the Hyperloop, a Hyperloop will be developed and we can actually, be transported, travel using a Hyperloop. If we do bad, if the competition sucks or whatever, people will not get enthusiastic about the Hyperloop and it will probably not be there in 20 years. So it's really an extra motivation to do our best to get that Hyperloop there.
Because we can shape the future. The work that we do right now, it can be part of the future, because when you are traveling in a Hyperloop in 20 years, you can say maybe to your children, like, hey, did he make this? Did he make this? That will be very nice, right? So it's an incentive.
That's cool. What would you say to someone, and pardon the pun here, who says, this is a pipe dream. This is never going to happen. You guys are crazy. proving contrarians. What do you tell that person? You look them in the eyes and say what?
200 years ago, there were trains and they were new. And people were very scary because when you travel faster than 30 kilometers per hour, then your head will explode and the cows will give sour milk because of the noise of a train. And now we have trains and we use them every day. The same goes for airplanes. It was 100 years ago that the first airplanes were there. And people were like, why do we want to travel faster? And why do we want to travel further? And I think that's the same with Hyperloop because it gives so much opportunities and it would be a pity if we don't research the possibilities. So that's what I always say to partners, like, it is, the possibilities are amazing and they are endless and we have to do something about that. So
don't be scared.
Indeed, don't be scared.
To all our listeners from Delft, stop being scared.
I'm kind of scared, Connor.
Don't be scared. I mean, it's normal.
I still want to know the toilet thing. I mean, how are you gonna make that toilet?
All right, we are back in Bonn in the studios of Deutsche Welle. Back from Delft. Now that we're here, we've got a bit of distance. It's been a couple days since we talked to Rienica and Tim. I don't know if they're going to pull this off.
It's a monumental task.
It's gargantuan.
And actually,
if you think about completely changing transportation.
And the other thing that I only thought of, I think this morning, was it's one thing to have 50% of your track be underground in other places. But if you're putting that much track underground here in Europe, I can tell you, just live in any big city and anytime they dig, they find Roman ruins and the whole operation stops. And there's no way you're digging all those tunnels throughout Europe without finding all sorts of Roman ruins that stops the operation for a year until the archaeologists can come and deal with it. And it's great that the archaeologists come out and do that, but it's just, there are a lot of hiccups.
Archaeology is one thing. Also, just the pure economics of it. Every time a construction project happens in this continent, regardless of how big it is, it takes 5 times longer and costs like 16 times more than it was initially going to be.
So huge hurdles. All of that said, on our drive back from Delft, we got stuck in traffic. The trip took 5 hours instead of 3. And honestly, it would have been lovely, to have a Hyperloop.
Had we had a Hyperloop, we would have been there in like 11 minutes.
Yeah.
But it was kind of cool.
There was one good thing that came
of it. It was kind of cool to be in the Deutsche Welle van.
So on the way back, in this van, there was enough space for us to play a little guitar and to kind of...
Yeah, we just, after that 2-hour session with Tim and Rienica, we had to unpack a little bit.
Yeah, so we created a song about this whole experience. And the thing is, we're never going to be able to recreate that song because it happened in a time and a place, and we have forgotten.
Yeah, the theory of relativity will tell us, that we. No, sorry.
So what you're about to hear is our tribute to that song. And we're going to attempt to recreate something that's not recreatable.
How'd it go again?
Not like that, but it could have been like that. Delft. I think that's how it went. It was about Delft, right?
Delft.
That was it. Trying to make a hyperloop. Thinking about a hyperloop in Delft.
Hyperpoop.
Doing this the good Dutch way. I hope the Hyperloop's here to stay in Delft. They're gonna use a vacuum tube. They don't need any loop wheels and lube, 'cause it's on magnets.
Levitating.
1200 kilometers per hour. That doesn't leave me feeling very sour. It makes me happy.
I'm in Delft.
The walls will be 10 centimeters thick. To break them open, you'd need a really nasty, nasty trick.
Or a real strong stick.
Levitation, where's my station? We don't need the United Nations, we just need the EU. And you.
Keep it going.
I think that's the...
All we need is you.
All we need is you.
Thanks for listening to Spectrum.
Thank you to our technician, Jürgen Kuhn. Thank you to all of our listeners this week. Thank you to the TU Delft and the Hyperloop team. That's it for me and Gabe.
And thanks to my dad who's outside.
Oh, yeah. Too. Thanks to Gabe's dad for coming in today.
See you guys.
To all of you, have a wonderful week ahead.